welcome to the F1 Strategy Report for Apex Race Manager, the mobile management simulator. On this week's edition, the British Grand Prix, we consider the similarities between holidaying in Greece and driving a Formula One car. And how did Valtteri Bottas end Vettel's race before it had even begun? That's all to come in this edition of the Strategy Report. My name's Michael Amanado, and again, after the British Grand Prix, I'm in a pub because it seems very natural, and who doesn't like being in pubs? I'm joined, though, by a man who makes it all the more pleasurable to be here. His name's Zach Preece. He's from Super License Podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. It's my chosen venue, nice and close to my house. Yeah. I picked the spot. It's my, essentially home race weekend, so I picked the venue. Mm-hmm. Paid for by Formula One Management, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. You'll be taking care of all the food that we do in here.
Yeah, all the hospitality, all the beers are on me. So this is a live broadcast, right? People can come down and...
Yeah. Just tweeting with the hashtag StrategyReportF1, and that's not even our hashtag. You'll just have to go and find us on Twitter and figure out what it is. There's no regular hashtag. We'll work on that. But British Grand Prix, it is, for many people, the highlight of the year, I suppose. It's one of the four or five classic races of the season at a classic Silverstone circuit, which might not be hosting the race in 2 or 3 years' time, but don't have to worry about that. I want to go back even all the way back to Wednesday, which was the setup for the race. We had F1 live London, live London, not the other way around. Conspicuous for the fact that, I think as Liberty Media said, great response from all teams and 19 of the drivers. The one driver not giving a great response was home hero Lewis Hamilton, which was controversial. I guess what's interesting about this, though, is that Hamilton seems to almost thrive off the controversy he kind of creates, because in this situation, he didn't seem to really be affected by it, does it? It's sort of in his character.
No, it's almost... I wouldn't say it was an expectation, but if I knew nothing about this and you told me a few weeks later that it was like, they had that thing and Lewis didn't go, I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, that sounds about right. Yeah. He had other things to do. He was probably hanging out with whoever on some beach somewhere. Yeah. He's entitled to a holiday. His family are here. There are all of these excuses that he had. But this seemed like an extraordinary event.
Yes.
There's the kind of thing that you change plans. Now, I mean, there was... as people in the public, like me, only found out 48 hours before it happened.
Yes.
Do we have any idea of how early the drivers and teams knew about the event?
I'm not sure how early they knew, but they definitely had plenty of warning. They knew this was happening, which is interesting because... I think James Allen was saying this week that maybe it would have been better if he'd mentioned beforehand that he wouldn't be going. Manage expectations, Don't wait for Toto Wolff to be asked on stage, where's Lewis? Where's your star driver? Oh, he's not here. And then everyone boos him, which is not ideal.
It reminds me of, Premier League teams fly out to other countries to do these big sort of exhibition matches. Arsenal's out in Sydney and now they're in Shanghai this week. And they announce who's going on these tours. You're not going to a game and being like, oh, I hope I see Sanchez. So you kind of, they take some stars and they take some ringers and they kind of trade everybody through the team and you hope to see the people that you really love. But kind of before things happen, if you're going to see the person that you love. Yeah. And there would have been huge amounts of people who would have turned up to this event expecting to see their hero.
Absolutely.
And he's the kind of guy who thrives off that kind of hero presence. Mm-hmm. I mean, the radio at the end of the race this weekend, he's like, I hear you out there. I see you all out there. Kind of freakishly, turn around and I'm behind you. I'm Lewis Hamilton, you're a fan of mine and I'm a fan of you. So it just seemed... You're right, it's kind of in character, but also just seemed like a huge missed opportunity for him.
Yeah.
Somewhat maybe because maybe he didn't want to share the spotlight with everybody
else. Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of rumours and stories about what kind of power play was behind this. Was it about him not wanting to do publicity days?
Yeah.
Was it about him trying to suggest that he's as big as the sport, of equal preference and opportunity?
I am the sport.
Exactly right. So he went to Mykonos instead of London, which, sure, it might be nicer than London, but, I don't even know. I've not been. So
I don't know if it's nicer than London. It's coming. It's going through. I was literally talking about this yesterday because I was in Albania just as he was somewhat nearby, very close to Greece. And I was like, maybe he's nearby. Maybe I could pop in and say hi if he doesn't want to hang out with the London people. Maybe we'll bring the London people to him.
We flew 100,000 fans down to Mykonos just to see how he would react.
It's a kind of thing I feel like he'd want to make up for now anyway. Like, did you... Like, there were the extra fan presence that he gave this weekend, the crowd surfing whilst the Finns are waiting in the media room.
Everyone enjoyed that. For them, probably.
Well, they had nothing to talk about, of course, because they were finished. So
they finished politely, on the champagne.
They politely ignore each other. It's kind of... I'm sure that was fine. But, it just... It seems like a massive opportunity that has just gone begging for not just him. And this is maybe the frustrating thing if I was at Mercedes, to say, well, look, he's our biggest asset right now. Well, I'm surprised that Mercedes didn't push a little harder and say, just an afternoon, mate. Mm-hmm. The afternoon before you have to be on the track anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not come down?
Yeah. I suspect in the future when these events are on, because we reckon there'll be maybe as many as five or so a year, someone will be, let's say, twisting his arm to make sure he's there.
Yeah.
But what I thought was interesting was that his excuse given, he stood by this steadfastly, so why not say that it's true? It must be if he's doing it, he's saying it, right? Is that this was about his preparation. We know he's got a pretty unique preparation style. It's not so much about being in the simulator, it's more about relaxing, we'll say. If anyone saw the video on Twitter, it looked very relaxing. But given the result of this weekend, qualified on pole by margin, won by a margin, set the fastest lap, I guess we can't really doubt that his preparation works. Like, he thrives on not only the preparation, but I guess being able to prove people wrong.
Yeah, there is a bit of that, isn't there? That there's very much a, I'm out here to make a statement every single race. And it's almost, I mean, he loves leading from the front, but I wouldn't say, I mean, every Formula One driver does.
Of course.
So, but now he's in this, there's a really interesting narrative to this season. And I think he would probably relish the idea that he's trying to prove himself every race weekend.
Yeah.
And he is the star of his team right now. And, you know, unequivocally the star of Formula One, regardless of how that makes you feel. And he would be looking at every race weekend and every minute of every bit of practice, qualifying, race, saying, this is another opportunity for me to really own this space.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't doubt him when he says he hopes there's battles and fights and, you know, he hopes that Bottas gets better and continues to challenge, because he the more story about Formula One, the better for him.
Yeah, I think so. He thrives on having that narrative. I mean, he's always said it, and I guess he is proving everyone who doubted him wrong in that sense.
Yeah,
so
every record, every pole position, every fastest lap is another thing that he can say, I proved my doubt is wrong. I proved myself again against the titans of the sport.
Yeah.
And he currently has some titans of the sport racing near him. So
Absolutely.
Every opportunity to do anything to beat them and show them up, except at press events, is what he wants to do.
Yeah. He chose a good weekend to do it as well, because this proved quite momentous in the championship, as we will detail. I mean, the tides completely turned. Partly that's down to him, obviously, winning the Grand Prix. Also down to tyres, which we'll get to later on. But to set up the qualifying performance and how this race got underway, we had the same penalty that Hamilton took in Austria, the five-place gearbox grid penalty, being applied to Valtteri Bottas. Exactly the same problem as well. And this sort of goes to Mercedes pushing every element to the limit in the effort to find extra performance against Ferrari. That set up a comeback drive for Bottas, but also Daniel Ricciardo took at first that penalty, and then more penalties when his car broke down in qualifying, after he topped the timesheets in the wet as well. It could have been a great qualifying for him.
Oh, yeah. He was in a position where, as soon as it happened, like, I had just tuned into qualifying, which is kind of like, and he's done. And, you know, everybody was sort of saying that, well, he's great in these conditions. You know, he'll fight from the back and he could find himself in the points. And I was like, probably a little bit more than the points. And then he'll find himself on a podium. Maybe not a podium. But, you know, there's every opportunity for him to do something here. But it feels like it's been a while since we've seen him fight from the back. And I'm sure he seemed happy with this weekend, considering the circumstances. Like we were talking about Lewis before, he relishes the opportunity to prove himself as well, especially when he doesn't feel like his team's in race-winning positions, at least from a performance point of view, from a strategy point of view, yes.
Yeah.
But it's so early in the season to see these kinds of penalties kind of as often as we are seeing them.
Yeah.
We don't want a championship decided by weird penalties in the last sort of four races. I mean, is four PUs and the sheer amount of gearboxes they're having to change and use, have we maybe hit the threshold now?
Well, he has used his fifth MGUH, one of the electrical components of the power unit. Yes, as it's more commonly
known. Not the McGurk.
No. You don't want to confuse them. I mean, it's easy to do, but you don't want to. You talk about the reliability of cars. It's likewise for Sebastian Vettel, who hasn't taken any power unit penalties yet, but I think it's his turbocharger that he's up to number four at this point.
Yeah.
So inevitably that's going to start hurting him. Mercedes has had power unit troubles in the past. That could come into play. But it is weird that in the fourth year of these power units, it seems to be proving most brittle. Like, in the first year we thought, oh, they'll get to Australia, they'll all blow up on the grid. And then what will we do? How do we decide who won? But it seems to be happening now in year four. Yeah. And I guess, again, it comes down to them all pushing for those extra tenths of performance. The low-hanging fruit is gone.
Yeah.
But we are facing a situation only 10 rounds in where the sort of reliability is going to play a part in the title.
Yeah, I feel like there's probably more variables. Because they're pushing everything kind of to the nth degree and right to the edge, the sheer amount of different tire strategies, you've got different, you know, there's just so many moving parts that you can't, and this is Formula One, there's lots of moving parts, actually, but the chance of something small going on one thing and swapping out a slightly older part just to keep things going and then that part going and breaking, and there's just so many things going on at this point where I don't think we'll get to the end of the season where that everybody, somebody's going to make it clear without any penalties. There's just too many things going on, unless, you know, we get to the point, I wonder if we'll see it again, where someone like Lewis or Sebastian just goes, well, we weren't going to win this race anyway, let's take all the penalties possible, basically build a new car and see if we can get this car to the end of the season.
The
McLaren Honda twice a season kind of situation.
Yes, I was going to say, the Fernando Alonso method. You know, every second race, take a lot of penalties,
just do everything.
And the next race you might score a point, and it's good like that. And we look at Ricciardo and Bottas, what was interesting. Ricciardo started a lot further back. They both had space to make up after qualifying, obviously, from their grid spots, but took two very different approaches. Now, Valtteri Bottas in Q2 qualified on the soft tyre, which is what Hamilton also did in Austria with the same penalty. Ricciardo chose, he had free choice, obviously, being at the back, to start on the super soft tyre, which didn't last as long. It was more delicate, although all the tyres lasted fairly long in this race, as is sort of the way Pirellis are working this season
these
so
days,
far.
Yeah.
But two very different effects, two very different reasons, as we'll find out. I want to get to them in a minute, though, because what really set up the entire race was the very start. Now, what I thought was going to be very exciting about this race, but didn't ultimately happen, wasn't the rain. It was the fact that Hamilton was in front and the two Ferraris qualified right behind them, which is like a strategic advantage. We saw it in Monaco, Red Bull double-teaming Bottas, and one of them got ahead.
Yeah.
Because inevitably one of them can out-strategize the other. But Verstappen ruined it all for Ferrari. He jumped Vettel, and Vettel couldn't get him back.
No, and it just seemed impossible. Like, I mean, Verstappen is always a threat off the line. Like, he's always going to find a gap. He's going to push a little harder, to the, much to the chagrin of Vettel and Hamilton, Bottas, and I mean, Raikkonen complains, but he complains about everything. But at least he complains in short bursts.
Yes.
So the fact that Verstappen was always going to be able to do something, but Vettel chasing behind for that long, I just thought at some point on one of the straights that Vettel would be able to just blow past, much like we saw Bottas doing basically on everybody that he came up against. Even Ricciardo was doing that on drivers. So the fact that Ferrari's with, as you said, upgrades this weekend. Didn't quite have the pace just to push past Verstappen.
Yes.
And look, Verstappen puts great defensive moves in. Like, you watch the onboard camera from Vettel, and Verstappen's just kind of making his car, you know, three car widths wide, and just seemed to be predicting where Vettel was going to go. It was incredibly upsetting for Vettel and Ferrari, and they just don't have the strategy to be, like, after the first couple of times, maybe they should have just changed strategy and brought him in earlier, or tried to force something different. But because Verstappen and Red Bull just kind of knew that track position was the only way they were going to get anything out of this race, they just kept him out. They just said, we'll just keep Verstappen out and see what happens.
It kind of goes to show as well, yes, Verstappen's defensive drive was great, but it does emphasize the Renault power unit is not as slow as perhaps people want to not give it credit for, I suppose. There is performance in there, and of course the driving from Verstappen. It's ironic that we seem to see Vettel getting into scraps with everyone except Hamilton, though, the one guy you kind of want him to this season.
Yeah, I feel like we're watching two separate seasons, and this is always, I mean, this happened all through Hamilton and Rosberg's battles. Like, very rarely did we see them actually fighting, and when we did, they're always on contra strategies. Someone's faster than the other and you get a crash inevitably. What we want is like the Verstappen and Vettel battle on track, where they're both right on the limit, finding the edges of the tracks, going off the track, but both kind of going off the track. No real controversies there, and kind of, you know, gleefully, but kind of just gleeful disdain for each other, if that's even a thing. I just want to see that between Vettel and Hamilton. But it's too often that we're just getting someone skip off down the road and somebody else just kind of trying to get second or third on the grid. So
now, the impact of all of this, it took 19 laps for Vettel to pit, and that was earlier than he anticipated doing. But he got the undercut on him because he had not only a good in-lap, a faster pit stop, but a phenomenal out-lap compared to Verstappen.
It was a personal best, wasn't it? Something like
that. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So at that point of the race, on new soft tyres, he blitzed it and ended up ahead of Verstappen, who had a slightly delayed pit stop. But
about 1.2 seconds
slower.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like,
but all of the difference, or most of the difference, came into the outlap, and he got ahead. But all of that time, just to emphasise how much faster Mercedes was, he was losing essentially 1 second a lap to Hamilton. So he was about 18 seconds down by the time he stopped. his race was over in terms of challenging for the lead. It all happened behind Verstappen, so it was not ever Hamilton that was going to lose in the race. It turned out to be this Red Bull Racing car.
Yeah, just out of the blue. And this is exactly the kind of... This is why we want to see more parity at the top of the grid.
Yes.
It's because you don't really want to see someone getting stuck behind as the reason why someone's race is kind of broken and prevents us from getting the show at the front. You would have preferred Verstappen to get up the road and go and chase Raikkonen and then, you know, be able to hold up Bottas at some point as well. Those kinds of changes. But, you know, we'll take it as it comes, and it's still worth it seeing Vettel and Verstappen just kind of duke it out.
Yeah, absolutely right. Now, that was one of the things that decided the race. The other was, in part, Bottas, because Vettel did stop quite early, and Ferrari and most teams went in expecting that the race could be a two-stop, because while degradation was low, the loads being put through the cars this year with the new regulations was immense. Pirelli was even surprised. I think 5 seconds faster per lap in the race, which was the upper limit of what we expected this season, meant that the tyres were being put through phenomenal loads, as perhaps what happened at the end of the race with the two tyre failures on the Ferraris. But it meant that because they're on the border, Ferrari gambled on a one-stop because Bottas, starting on the soft tyre, knew he was going to do a one-stop. He was going to take that tyre for as long as possible, then switch to the super soft.
Wait for everything in front of him to happen.
Absolutely right. Whereas if you switch to a two-stop, knowing Bottas was in the same race you were, you risk getting stuck in the kind of traffic Vettel had already become stuck in through Verstappen. This would ultimately, at least on the face of things, really cost Vettel because his tyre failed towards the end of the race. Now, we don't know exactly why that is, the time of recording at least, neither did Pirelli, because they hadn't said as much, but surely some of that wear played into that. If he hadn't run for quite as long, perhaps it wouldn't have happened. Although there were stints longer than Vettel's on the soft, Ferrari seemed to be wearing their tyres a little bit harder. I mean, Raikkonen's was the other to fail.
Yeah, and I wonder if those two drivers are pushing extra hard. I mean, there is a lot on the line for them this race. They didn't need any upsets from Red Bull. We're moving into this delicate part of the season where Vettel can't really be dropping points like this anymore. So it was on Raikkonen to try and salvage something from this race and hopefully even try and clear a path a little bit for Vettel to slot in nicely to. We talk about this with Hamilton with, you know, brake temperatures and how quickly he'll burn through tyres. And he's the kind of racer that would burn through them just as quickly. And, you know, I would expect Bottas to something have happened to him as well because he was fighting quite hard. We saw Ricciardo fighting hard as well. The fact that it happened to the Ferraris, there's something else going wrong. And look, Pirelli has said that they're different problems for Raikkonen and Vettel. Maybe Vettel had a slight puncture somewhere. Raikkonen's just kind of delaminated in it. He was still keeping pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
But the surface came away, which is a really odd thing. But Pirelli are just kind of in the unknowns right now because the tyres are working really well. And maybe we're back to this cliff scenario, not just the cliff of immediate performance disappearing, but the tyre just completely disintegrating and disappearing on you. I think it could well be that this race specifically, with Vettel having to follow along so much behind Verstappen, is kind of having to fight the whole race, that he put his car through way more than anybody else.
I think that in terms of the tyres, we've talked a lot this season about them being too hard, because often they have been, just because Pirelli had to guess. And of course, naturally, you're going to guess conservative because you don't want tyre failures to happen every other week. But what we did see was that cliff kind of coming back. Max Verstappen made that, at the time, unusual pit stop at the very end of the race, but simply because his lap times in the last couple of laps just started dropping off, because all the wear, not degradation, just the tread wearing down through the loads, meant that there was no more grip left in those tyres. Now, we don't know if that did affect the Ferrari tyres, but we are seeing the tyres didn't struggle to be warmed up this weekend. They performed quite well. We didn't have suffer from a lack of grip. But we did just get that you push and push and push, your lap times get better, and then they stop getting better.
Yeah.
And you have to change,
and
which
you
is
can't
sort
predict
of what we
it.
Want. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it's predictable races where people know, when you hear Ted going, this is the pit stop windows, and everybody comes in on those windows, and that's just happened. What you miss out on then is the racers who will, like, specifically conserve tyres and be able to get through on a one stop. Or, you know, you suddenly change from a two to a three just to change things up and to see if you can push all race. If that's the kind of unexpected happenstance that we'll see, that's exactly how Valtteri Bottas will end up taking the championship.
Yes.
Those kinds of things.
Just manage it.
It's just we see it with Daniel Ricciardo when he scoops up podiums. Just getting to the end of the race consistently all the time. And this is why they're pitted Verstappen. They started dropping off, and they were like, God, you see what happened to Kimi? We don't want that. Get
exactly.
him in. I was watching Wimbledon at the same time as watching this race. I was like, wait, why is everybody's tyres just going? Like, just everybody's going to explode.
It almost seemed like that, didn't it?
Yeah, and Red Bull just, they had this time, so they did it. But it looked dicey for those couple of laps.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that did mean Bottas could get to the end on his one stop, obviously he knew he was going to do one when Ferrari and even Max Verstappen and most other teams weren't quite prepared for it, was that Verstappen and Vettel fight, because it meant when he eventually did pit, he got all the way up to behind Hamilton without stopping, lap 32, could pit into almost clean air, just behind Vettel, with substantially newer tyres, which meant he could pass Vettel and then move up into a position to try and attack Raikkonen, which he didn't have to do in the end because Raikkonen's tyre also failed. But his management of those tyres, with the benefit of that Vettel-Verstappen fight, meant could culminate in P2, which, I mean, really does go to help on a day where Hamilton was pretty much untouchable, him stay in the championship fight, because he's only 26 points behind Vettel now, which was more or less just behind where Hamilton was before going into this weekend. So whilst, you know, he had to recover from a low grid spat, his recovery did mean that he almost came out of this race, barring the fact that Vettel didn't score very many points, better than Hamilton in some respects.
Yeah, if the penalty's the negative.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I'm not going to get pole here, and Hamilton's probably going to win this from pole if he gets pole. Like, the best I could hope for is a podium, and just to get it so easily in the end, and to take second just like that. Does he know how to grin? I don't know if he can grin, but he'll definitely be smiling as hard as he can. Kind of like, doesn't reach his eyes in that you know, kind of grimacy kind of way.
Yes.
He's the emoji with the flat eyes and the big smile. Just kind of like, everything's fine.
Yeah.
When it's, I suppose it is in his mind.
It's good. It's
so,
okay.
Yeah, he'll take this. And I'm sure he's at home sitting there like, I'm well in the fight here. You know, anything can go wrong. He's beaten Hamilton hands down, once this year. So there's options for him.
Yeah. On a weekend, Hamilton released his own emojis too. So.
Ah, gosh.
Oh, that's for a different podcast, I think. So that was the way Bottas managed to recover. He used the soft tyres knowing that he needed the pace towards the end of the race when his fellow front runners, who had competitive cars, obviously, wouldn't have that kind of tyre advantage. He was on the super soft, they were on used softs. It worked for him, he managed to pass Vettel. The alternative, though, somehow, was Daniel Ricciardo, who started at the very back on super soft tyres. Really exactly the opposite of Bottas's approach, but he did so knowing, A, that he has a history of being able to manage his tyres. So this is, in that sense, a very classic Ricciardo race, but he knew all the cars in front of him were certainly slower than him. So the super soft tyre, in that sense, was the right approach. And then the idea was that he'd be able to stop under the soft tyre, having already passed everybody, and then sort of cruise to the finish. And he executed it perfectly. I mean, this was the drive of the day.
Yeah, and it really, they know at Red Bull that there's this gap from sort of third team back, that there's this big performance gap between them into the Force India's Williams and Toro Rosso's and Renault's. Well, one Renault. that there's this gap, and what that means is that they knew that strategy from day dot, and they were concerned. I'm guessing that if he did go out on the soft to start the race, that if he did happen to not have the performance to get past people, he was just going to essentially wear that tyre down, being stuck behind a Fernando Alonso or a Massa or something like that. You know, a car that he couldn't quite get in the DRS zone. Not Alonso, obviously, but a Force India or something like that. That was going to be a Mercedes-powered car. You know, that he wasn't going to be able to get by. I mean, if the Toro Rossos hadn't taken each other out, maybe he might have had some concerns getting past them as well. Who knows? But it was just the idea that he was just going to blitz past everybody, which he started doing. You know, first few laps, we're sitting there watching. Just his every 25 seconds, there's another Ricciardo just overtaking somebody else,
and
then he goes off onto the grass and kind of just gets back on and just goes, takes a deep breath, and just starts again, just starts racing up the field again. It never looked in doubt. He made that car look better than it actually is.
I think so, yeah. We've had a lot of situations this year, actually, where drivers seem to be outperforming their machinery. Now, whether that's a function of the regulations becoming more about the drivers being able to throw the car around. I mean, Alonso does it every other week. Oh. Every other week he says he had the best drive of his entire career. Carlos Sainz seems to do it, and now Daniel Ricciardo, I think, has done it with his performance.
Yeah, this is... I think that we actually have had Daniel Ricciardo in that string of podiums. The joke has always been he kind of just raced his own race because of that performance gap. He just kind of gets into qualifies fifth, ends up around there, and just kind of goes, oh, well, here I am. I didn't see anybody else this race, but here I go again.
What happened?
We haven't really had to see the Red Bull necessarily fight their way through the field this season.
Yeah, this is true.
So this is, the chassis is great. The grip he's finding, like, he was overtaking in places where people don't generally overtake at Silverstone, and once he'd made the overtakes, just where you expect him to go wide on corners out of the straight, he was just still cutting into the apex, basically. So he was on it. And maybe he did make the car, as I said, maybe he did make the machinery look a little better than it actually was, but he seems happy.
Yeah.
He seems like he's in a good space.
Yeah, and that's two great recovery drives. I mean, Azerbaijan, a little bit of an asterisk, given most people crashed in front of him and he skirted around all the danger. This was really just, I have to overtake everybody.
He had to skirt around a little bit of danger at the beginning.
Oh, that's true. He skirted well around it, in fact. For a little while, he was the danger. So. But it worked out fantastically for him, and it does remind us of those tire-saving qualities he did have, certainly at the start of his Red Bull career, where I suppose the tires were more delicate. And talking about overtaking, once he did make that stop, he couldn't quite build the gap to it was a Haas, I think it was Grosjean, and then also the Force India cars, had to pass them, did so in 1.5 laps, I think it was. They didn't really seem to require too much effort.
In fact, I think the live radio they had, the radio was like, now Grosjean's up the road, and just as the video of, just as the live broadcast was him overtaking Grosjean, I was just like, oh, he's there, and he's
it's already
done.
Happened.
Don't worry about it.
Oh no, it's all over, it's already happened. So it was a fantastic race from him, and yes, arguably driver of the day. Granted, Hamilton didn't have to do too much to stay out front. He had a very good drive himself.
Always sus on that. How hard is it to lead these Formula One races?
It can't be that difficult, can it, to drive these cars?
No.
Max Verstappen's a teenager. Isn't that what they say? It's so easy.
Stroll has actually never driven a car before, and yet here he is driving a Formula One round.
He's doing okay. He's doing okay. I want to look some other places on the grid. Felipe Massa scored the last point. He had a great start. He qualified not so high, but like he did in Austria, pretty much rocketed off the line and scored some points.
The
good
kind
on
of
him.
Thing you expect to however old driver to be able to do pretty consistently.
Like an octogenarian. He's done it a lot.
Just drive off the line, man. It's not difficult. You've got these kids around you who had 20 turns at it. You should be able to do it pretty well.
You can do it okay. He continues to do it okay. But what it did mean was that Stoffel Vandoorne did not get a point again for the, what is this, round 10, for the 10th time.
Yes.
He did qualify in the top 10, was ahead of Massa until the first pit stop. Looked good to keep that, because it, for whatever reason, this weekend, I suppose with Honda's new spec engine, they almost seemed kind of like a match in this weird time where Williams is a bit confused with its car and its upgrade. McLaren Honda had certain tracks like this where there is dependency on aero, did okay, was robbed of the opportunity to defend against him though, because he had just a slow stop. Whilst that's not a strategy in itself, I mean, the stop is the most crucial part.
These are things that if your team is mid-tier, and I mean, this is something that Williams is focused really hard
on.
It's like, we can't control everything else. We're going to have sub 2-second pit stops as often as we can, and just take all of that stuff out of it. Try to be reliable, but the things that we can control, we'll do our best to do as good as possible.
Yes.
So it's almost inexcusable from Honda to have this kind of error.
It sort of is, yeah.
Especially when I remember Ricciardo overtaking Alonso, and Alonso was right back on his gearbox almost immediately, trying to get back in the slipstream and trying to get back something. So it's not like Ricciardo just belted off down the road. So there was something in that McLaren Honda this weekend.
Yeah,
it is disappointing. As you said, it's not strategy in and of itself, but the things you can control, you've got the time to really manage them out of, you know, manage the gremlins out of that ability.
Yeah, and it's sort of it's a little bit of an embarrassing mistake from McLaren, considering, you know, the story for them all year has been it's only Honda the reason we're not doing well. Yeah. They have an opportunity to score a point.
Yeah,
I know. I don't know what it's doing there. I think it's just a man in the back running. It's the Flintstone car. But when they have the opportunity to score a point, it's sort of them themselves that made that error. And like you say, I mean, it's a strength of Williams. They went up against probably the best in pit stops, but it was a 4-second advantage that turned into a 4-second deficit by the end of the race. They should have been able to score that point for Stoffel.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, Stoffel must just be looking around going like, did I get on the wrong program all those years ago? Should I have been on the Red Bull program or the Mercedes program? Am I going to be stuck through the McLaren Honda terrible years? Honda pulls out, no one really touches Vandoorne. Like, is he a bit of
a Magnussen now?
Or Grosjean even.
Oh.
You know, like, there is, where does, like, I just don't know where Stoffel will go next, because he doesn't have the results and the consistency in the vehicle to actually put in performances that are challenging in any way.
Yeah.
You know, at least Sainz and even Stroll can say that he's got a podium.
Wow,
you know, like, this is, maybe you're better off at Force India right now than you are at McLaren Honda.
Well, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because they've been saying the same about Stroll and Vandoorne. Stroll has the advantage of all those tests he's paying for between every race, it sounds like. But they're struggling to adapt, not just to the physicality of these cars, because at the end of the day, you have a long pre-season in the gym, all the simulations, you can do it.
Personal but trainers.
Sorting out the cars and setting up the cars, they're both struggling with, because Formula One cars are pretty much the most complex in all of single-seater racing, if not all of racing. But I'm not slowly getting there in the same rate that I guess Stoffel is kind of getting there. It'd be a horrible shame if, you know, given McLaren Honda's problems, that they didn't have faith in Stoffel, when really it's hardly the best environment to be training up a young driver.
No, and I don't know. I mean, Fernando Alonso seems so disillusioned with the sport.
Mm-hmm.
We don't hear a lot of stories of, like, Alonso being super helpful to
no,
Stoffel and Van Dorn, and Stoffel Van Dorn being like, getting a lot, like, me and Alonso went down at the track till 10 p.m. every night discussing strategies and setups. Just imagine Alonso just walks out and goes, cool, I'll see you tomorrow, hopefully the car works.
Yeah. Post like a passive aggressive Instagram post about Honda.
Exactly. Yeah. Stoffel's there with his pad and his pen to ask Alonso what he thought of the day, and there's nothing of that, you know. And yet we've got Massa saying that he's really being Stroll up and trying his best, and then even Ricciardo and Verstappen work a lot together. So you know, there are things out there that I would kind of expect and hope from Fernando Alonso, but he's so disillusioned. I wonder how much he's helping with the setup of the car.
Yeah, well, a decision, he says, should be coming soon about the future engine supply for that team. Who knows what it'll be? It'll either be Fernando Alonso or Mercedes, or McLaren or Honda, I think.
Yeah,
it's not going to be both. So
exactly.
We'll wait and see how that goes. And I guess an honourable mention, or should it be dishonourable mention? I'm not really sure. Goes to Pascal Wehrlein and Sauber. Now, in Spain, and yes, there were a lot of crashes in Spain that helped them, they pulled off a one-stop strategy when everyone else was doing two or even three stops from memory to get their first points of the year. And they attempted it again here when it looked like degradation was lower than it actually turned out to be by stopping twice behind the safety car. First onto the medium, which, again, no one used at all this race.
I'm using those on my car this weekend.
Yeah. Well, you may as well. They look good. The white stripe looks nice against the car. And then switched back to the soft, which he was going to try and get to the end of the race, but he ultimately found couldn't be done. But it is nice to know, at least even if we've got these conservative tyres, which don't necessarily give us all the action at the front, that there is still room for those sort of out-of-the-blue strategies. Even if it didn't work this week, it does show that giving something a go, especially if you're a backmarker like Sauber, which, let's be honest, doesn't really have anything to lose, could have paid off big time for Pascal. Yeah.
And they're really, these are not so much career-defining moments, but they're really big learning weekends for the drivers. You know, the Wehrlein's, like, Bottas used to have this happen to him all the time, is that he would sit, you know, he'd have to try and nurse tyres through the end of the race. Or, you know, you want to be the first people out on inters in wet races. You know, these are the sacrifices you need to make to try and make these races work, but also to get that experience. You know, he's going to walk away from this weekend going, like, I know how this car performs when it starts getting pretty bad out there on these tyres. So, you know, I think it's good for both the team and him.
It's all about information gathering at the end, because that's what's going to get them probably their next points.
Well, yeah, any time they finish is another, you know, 60 laps that they'll be able to bank and say, like, that was pretty good.
That's what Honda keeps saying, but another retirement for Fernando Alonso. That's not strategy, though.
We stopped tweeting about it. It happens so often.
Yeah, it's so often that we've stopped talking about it on the show. There's no more, like, Honda update at the end, because you know what happened.
No.
I think it's up to grid place penalty 150, perhaps?
Yeah, even Ricciardo made a joke about it in an interview. He's like, he's starting at turn 15.
Everyone's getting it.
Every time he gets shot, right? I mean, Palmer must just feel the same. You know, the setup lap, what's it called?
Formation lap.
That's what I was looking for. It's totally left my mind. I was going to say the parade lap. Really?
Well, for him, I guess it was. You had to walk back, right? You had to wave to everybody.
What if the truck they all stand on's ever broken down on the parade lap?
Would they have a backup one?
I just
like the rushes out, they're like, quick, jump on.
Maybe the JCB cranes just pull it along for a 10-minute lap around the circuit. But no, I mean, Palmer again, it's just, he's, what do you reckon? Strategy for Renault overall
team? I'm happy to take this digression, because it's something I'm very passionate about, Jolyon Palmer's future in Formula 1.
Because you're a big fan.
Well, yes, naturally. No, look, my strategy is you can't score fewer than 0 points, which is Palmer's current tally, alas. I see no reason why, pending the post-Hungary test, there's a two-day in-season test Hungary, if they put Robert Kubica in that test and he performs well, he should be in there for the rest of the season. Because rather than, say, put him in for a whole season and find out that he's just lacking that 1% due to his injury or just due to being out of the sport, you have half a season to say whether or not the comeback is a success. You lose nothing either way. You get the great news story. If it's not a success at the end, you can say, we gave him a go. We both discovered that it's not quite there for him at this stage.
And he's choosing to retire.
Exactly.
We're not cutting him out. He's choosing to leave.
You pick someone up next year. There's nothing to lose, as far as I'm concerned. He can't score fewer points than Jolyon.
No, but maybe it's the size of the opportunity and the opportunity cost. So here is, as far as strategically for the long term of the team, are you better off taking Pierre Gasly. I mean, you know, someone like this, you know, maybe under an engine agreement with Red Bull, sure. getting someone in for relatively cheaply, who could be at the team for 3, 4, 5 years.
Sure.
Just as maybe they're on an uptick as well, because Kubica's
like
not going to be.
Like a Carlos Sainz.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Hülkenberg. He's probably the long term bet right now for Renault, but they'd love to have a French driver in there.
For
surely,
sure. Why wouldn't you?
So
yeah.
there's the I think it's just picking between who's going to be the most opportune for Red Bull for Renault at this point.
Yeah.
Because Palmer offers them nothing. He just is he cheap? I don't know. like what is he giving Renault right now? Because even when the car's there, it's not worth anything.
Well, that's what they say. I mean, in situations like Monaco, where Hülkenberg had the engine problem, I think it was, or in any case, couldn't finish the race, you should expect your second car. I mean, it's the whole purpose of having a second car, to back it up and score the points you couldn't have. But he wasn't there to score those points, and he hasn't scored any points. And I think it's instructive that, I'm not sure exactly what the position is, but if you doubled Hülkenberg's points, essentially, so assume the second driver was scoring the same as he was, they'd be much higher in the championship, I think right behind Force India. Whereas now they're competing with Haas towards the back of the constructors' title standings.
And look, Hülkenberg is not renowned as being that, just that top shelf driver. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's Le Mans champion.
Yes.
That's important. And look, he's getting a lot out of this car that we don't expect him to, but he gets first dibs on the parts every time, and he's getting preferred strategy in. But he's an immaculate driver. But it's not like they've got a Max Verstappen sitting in that team who just needs a leg up and then he'll be world champion. I don't think that's on the cards for Nico Hülkenberg, probably for the rest of his career, unless he landed the Ferrari drive or maybe a Mercedes drive when Hamilton retires, maybe. Will he ever retire? Who knows? from the long-term standpoint for Renault, I just... They're totally up in the air. Just as I said, they're finding some performance... Mm-hmm. I don't think that this can be the long-term strategy, this current driver lineup.
No, well, the interesting thing is that, I mean, at the moment they are a midfield team, and obviously the last couple of years they've been a midfield team, but they are a constructor. They have designs to be competing for the championship in the near-term future. I mean, next year I think their target should be podiums, from memory. They've got
especially
to
as they're not getting name credit on the Red Bull car.
Oh, yeah, you know, exactly
so
right.
So basically, other than the money they're being paid, it's not really worth anything.
Yeah, yeah. So where they go with that will be interesting to see. But that's some sizzle for next week's episode, when we might know who's going to be in that test. Will it be Kubica? Will it be one of the drivers they've got an eye on?
I feel sorry
for
the young drivers. If it's Kubica, I'd be like...
I understand that point of view. But it's such a good story. Like, that guy...
But doesn't this seem like... That seems... That story, the Kubica getting back in that car, seems like... seems old Formula One.
I suppose.
Liberty Media is new Formula One.
They want the young
kids. And if they had their druthers, they'd be like, put the F2 stars in, put the kids in.
Gasly's the reigning F2 or GP2 champion, but he's not in Formula One.
Which
doesn't seem to have a road to it either.
Well, maybe after this weekend with the Red Bulls crashing, Kubica won't be at the team.
Well, who's
who
to
knows?
Say?
Yeah.
It's all to play for.
They've dropped the driver mid-season before, right? Maybe we'll have two fresh drivers on the grid by the end of the year.
It'll all be interesting. We'll wait and see. I can't wait till the mid-season break all of a sudden to see what happens. That was the British Grand Prix. An interesting British Grand Prix. Another good race for Formula One. It's been good to wrap it up with you, Zach.
It's been fantastic to be here.
That was the strategy report for the 2017 British Grand Prix. But if you want to read more about the strategy from this week's race, go to f1strategyreport.com for all the pit stop stats, tyre data, and Jack Leslie's write-up of all the action from Silverstone. The strategy report is powered by the 2017 edition of Apex Race Manager, the number one new racing game in Germany, Italy, and Australia. You can download Apex Race Manager for free for iOS and Android devices. My name's Michael Laminato. You can find me at Michael Laminato on Twitter, and I'll catch you in 2 weeks' time for a look back at the Hungarian Grand Prix.